Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another edition of Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views. Coming to you with my very chilly co-host, Dr. Karen Lewis. How's it going up there, Karen?
Yeah, rub it in, you're in Florida. I get it.
What's the temperature?
So, yeah, no, we're chilly. But we have a really cool guest on the show today. I'm super excited that she actually agreed to hang out with the two of us schlubs, but voluntarily.
Absolutely.
Her name's Dr. Heidi Hemmett, and she's a veterinarian. She actually graduated from University of Wisconsin in 2009 and practiced medicine, you know, like general practice like we do in Massachusetts. And then she decided in 2015 to become a certified veterinary acupuncturist, and she went to the Chi Institute in Florida, down by you, actually. And she also learned other traditional Chinese medicine, which we can talk about. But she now actually has a house call practice in my neck of the woods in Illinois. And she just does acupuncture. I think it's a really cool thing. So when I first heard about her, that she had just moved from Massachusetts to Illinois and she was doing house calls and doing acupuncture, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to meet this woman. Because I'm a house call vet too, but I don't do acupuncture. So I thought she'd be a perfect person to know, and it turns out she is. So anyway, Dr. Hemmett, welcome to the show. We're glad you came.
Thank you.
So basically, let's start with just, I think, let's just make sure people know what acupuncture actually is, because I think a lot of people might have like the movie version of acupuncture in their mind, and maybe not what you really do when you come in and you're treating a dog. So can you tell us a little bit of that?
Absolutely. So basically, you want to perform the acupuncture in a relaxed setting as much as possible. And I find, as you probably have experienced yourself, a lot of times animals are most relaxed at home, you know, versus getting in the car and going to the office. So basically we set up an area for them, either a bed or a blanket, couch, wherever they're comfortable, and talk to the owner a little bit. The acupuncture itself involves using very small gauge needles. They're much smaller than the needles used for vaccines, and there's specific points along the body in certain areas called meridians, along the back and down the legs, on the head, and each point does a special thing. There are points that can help stop vomiting, points that can help with diarrhea, seizures, pain control for arthritis, or back pain. Dogs can get IVDD. I think you guys talked about that on another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the needles that I use, they're very narrow, very small diameter. And a prescription or treatment usually will entail 10 to 20 needles or acupuncture points used. And it depends on the animal. If it's the first time I'm treating an animal, I'll start with less needles. Just to get them used to it, and usually by the second or third treatment, I can do, you know, as many as, you know, I feel is effective. If you do too many, just like with anything, you can, you know, they don't respond as well to too many needles. So again, typically 15 to 20 needles per treatment, and the needles stay in for about 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
As long as they're tolerating them. If there's a point that seems to bother them, I just take the needle out. Most of the time, they do very well, and they don't need to be sedated. A lot of people wonder about that.
Mm-hmm.
Once the needles are in, a lot of times, especially if you're treating a painful condition, the animal will get a little sleepy during the treatment because they're relaxed and the pain that they're experiencing is reduced.
So how long does a treatment, like for the example of pain, let's say, how long does the typical treatment last before they need another one?
So when you first start them out, it's interesting because it's similar to a lot of other treatments. In veterinary medicine, we have, you know, Adequan is a type of injection that you'll use. When you start that, they get it twice a week for the first month, and then you go to monthly. And a lot of other treatments are the same way. Glucosamine supplements start at a higher dose initially. So acupuncture is similar to that. If it's a painful condition and it's been going on for months or years, So if it's more chronic, then ideally I would start them with a treatment once a week for three treatments, and then go to every 2 weeks for a couple treatments, and then typically we can go out to monthly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. In some cases, you know, if either financially or scheduling, people can't do it weekly, you can still see a benefit from the treatments even every couple of weeks. It just takes a little longer to see the full effect of the treatments. In general, typically it takes about three treatments to start to see an effect, although I've had some patients or owners notice improvement after even one treatment.
So I'd like to, we discussed this a little bit beforehand. I did my one-day course with Dr. Shea. I'm not certified. I more dabble in it than anything, but I, you know, pretty much learned the points, got the cookbook, so to speak, you know, the cheat sheet, find the points. And so I'm basically focused on arthritis, orthopedics, you know, and Dr. Shea said, yes, you're qualified to do seizures as well, but I haven't gone there. The question I have for you is I still yet to have the courage to recommend it in a cat.
That was my question exactly. I was like, how is, oh my gosh.
I know a lot of cats get acupuncture. In fact, the two assistants that were helping in the wet lab when I was learning under Dr. Shea, they were like, oh, we love needling cats. It's great. They tolerate it so well. And it's hard for me to picture that. So could you elaborate on the feline cases? Maybe I'll have the courage to do one day. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. You definitely should. Yes. So there are some differences between dogs and cats. For sure, there's certain points that cats do not like that dogs don't seem to mind. But in general, I've been most surprised at how easily they tend to accept the treatment. I don't think I have any kitty patients out here yet that I'm treating with acupuncture, more herbals for whatever reason. You know, I'd love to have my first cat patient, but in Massachusetts, I had quite a few. And Dr. Shea, did he teach you the flying needle technique?
Yes.
That term?
Yes.
So I did have one cat who he always made me laugh because he was unpredictable. Some days he would act like he was going to try to swap me, but not every time. So with him, I kind of used the flying needle technique, which is you go very quickly. Yeah. And
Dr. Shea was a master at it. He was amazing. Yeah, of course, you know.
Is it like playing darts or like how does it like?
The needle is still the same small needle, so it's not like you're throwing a dart, but that motion perhaps, yes.
Wow.
But again, that was the exception. That was the exception by far. Most of my kitty patients, they really like the acupuncture. It's very interesting in my experience and what I was taught during the program, and I have seen it to be true. Certain species respond differently to acupuncture. Some respond with fewer treatments and have a stronger response. And cats are one of those where they tend to respond a little bit faster than a dog would. So for like an arthritic cat, I really like acupuncture because, number one, it's very safe. There aren't any side effects. You know, there are a few contraindications for acupuncture, and we can talk about that if you want, but there's no side effects the way there are with, some of the medications we use in the traditional, pharmacy, like a Medicam or those types of things. Other problems, cats, there aren't, you know, there's not a lot of money. You're not going to make a lot of money on those types of medications, so there's not a lot of research behind it, and there's not a lot of good options. Mm-hmm. And the reason I like the acupuncture for the kitties is because it is effective, it is safe, and they respond very well, and most of them tolerate it extremely well. I haven't treated a cat in their own house, so I think in that situation I would probably have a setup where there's still a bed or blanket that's comfy, but up on a table that they don't, or in a room they're not usually in. Because a lot of cats in their own domain, they can be, a little feistier than they would at the vet office. So we had a nice room in Massachusetts at the hospital where I worked that had a couch, and I had one owner would bring in her two cats, and they would sit on the couch next to her. I'd put the needles in the two cats, and then they would all take a nap. I'd walk out, and they'd all take a little nap. And they did very well with it. They didn't really have to be restrained or anything.
I keep hearing this. Cats, at some point, yeah. I got to be a believer, you know?
Well, because like with cats and arthritis, the options suck. I mean, they totally suck. I mean, it's like, there's Medicam and there's Onsior and you know, the sales reps come out and they're like, oh, this is great for arthritis. And there's always a big asterisk, you know, after all the stuff. And it says, and may cause renal failure, you know? And like, so what owner's going to be like, you know, most old cats have very questionable kidneys anyway. So let's kick them over the edge of the cliff, you know, with this drug. And the other medications, like the glucosamine-based ones, like Dasiquin and Cosequin, I'm not sure how much they really do. They can't hurt, and I use them a lot. All my old cats, I'm like, well, and it's very non-confrontational because it's a flavored powder you sprinkle on the food because no one wants to pill their cat, you know. So, yeah. So the whole, you know, I always recommend the non-confrontational medications. But yeah, I mean, I think it's actually awesome. I hadn't even thought of it for cats until you talked about it, but I'm like, it's actually one thing for cats we can do because dogs are all on NSAIDs and gabapentin and tramadol. You know, we at least have like a whole arsenal for dogs we can do. And cats, it's like you said, I guess there's no money into researching it because there's squat.
It's off label, but I do like Adequan in cats if owners are, you know, willing to do the trips in, you know, or if you teach them how to do it at home. But other than Adequan, which is off label use,
gives them happy bladders too sometimes. Bonus.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I got a question for you. So I'm not allowed to do it because I'm not certified. Dr. Shea was clear. You know, you can't go there unless you take the leap and go through the intensive coursework. And it's a lot. I mean, I remember there was 5 full weekends, and I obviously didn't do it for a reason because I just couldn't make the time to do it. But for those of you that have done this, and there's a board certification testing at the end too, correct?
So, yes, there's a practical exam where you have to identify 20 points out of like 160, and you don't know what
a lot of
they're going to be asking you. So they'll tell you a point. There's a dog there, and then you have to point to the point.
Right.
And that's the clinical, and then there's a written exam.
Right.
And then you write up a case study and submit that, and once that is approved, then you get your certification.
Yeah, it's a process, and that's why I didn't go there, or part of the reason I didn't go there. But aqua acupuncture, I'd love for you to talk about that because that's a certified specialty, obviously. I understand some do. Well, first of all, just tell us what it is.
Can I just say that when I first met Heidi, you told me about acupuncture. I'd never heard of it before, and I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Okay, I just have to say that was like my favorite thing ever. So anyways, I'll let you explain what it is.
Sure, absolutely. So acupuncture is when you inject a liquid into an acupuncture point. And the most commonly used substances would be vitamin B12 is often used. You can even use saline. Sometimes if I'm in a pinch, if I'm somewhere, well, actually, I guess I could always use saline, but you can use LRS or some, you know, physiologic solution. And the benefit of doing the acupuncture is the stimulation or the effect lasts longer than just a dry needle. Dry needle, that term means just the acupuncture needle itself put into a point. So especially when you're first starting a patient. So if I had a patient that came in and it was in for severe vomiting and diarrhea, for example, which, you know, happens a lot. And I would do the traditional workup, you know, x-rays, blood work, if indicated, based on the exam and history. And there are points that can help. Single point treatments aren't, you know, I don't typically go to someone's house and do one point, but in that situation where I'm at the clinic and I'm treating them in the traditional way, I'll often use the GV1 point, which is directly under the tail. It's halfway between the base of the tail on the ventral surface and the anus. So it looks kind of awkward, like they wouldn't accept it. And this is one
horrible.
Of those points. It does, but I have to say, in general, especially larger dogs, they really don't react. They even dogs that hate having their temperature taken, they tolerate this point. I'm not sure why. And I use a tiny needle, so I would use, if it was available to me, like a 27-gauge needle. You can use an insulin syringe as well, which is even smaller. But on a larger dog, in general, you'll probably put a milliliter into the point. If it was a smaller dog, you could do a half a milliliter. But I've had dogs walk by me that it was somebody else's case, and the dog was having, blowout, explosive, And I just couldn't, watch that happening. And it was on other medications. And I did the aquapuncture, and it stopped. And it had been having that diarrhea, I guess, for a couple days. The technicians, let me know. So it's a very powerful tool. The aquapuncture itself, you've probably done it many times, both of you. Another point that can reduce heat it is called GV14. It's right over the shoulder blades. So anytime subcutaneous fluids are given over the shoulder blades, you're doing aquapuncture into GV14.
Oh, and it so sounds any so dog, much fancier when you call it that.
Any dog that comes in, with HGE that's mild enough to be treated outpatient, or just acute onset bloody diarrhea, but they're otherwise eating and stable enough to not stay in the hospital, if you do subcutaneous fluids on them, you're helping remove that heat. And one sign of heat would be bleeding. So bloody diarrhea would be, damp heat from the traditional, Chinese veterinary medicine perspective. So you are doing it without knowing it, but that definitely helps those patients.
So is aquapuncture more effective than if you put a acupuncture needle in that same place?
So they're both effective, but the effect lasts longer.
Because the liquid's there longer, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're leaving something in that space for longer than the needle, because the needle would stay in 10 to 15 minutes. But with the saline, it takes 12 to 24 hours to absorb. So that's another way to extend the effect of a treatment, especially early on if you're just starting. If someone's driving a long distance or financially they can't do weekly, you can add in some aquapuncture.
Since you brought up the heat, I didn't wrap my head around it great in my one-day course. So I would love for you to the best ability in lay terminology, I guess, elaborate on the different elements of acupuncture. I guess the traditional Chinese medicine perspective of heat and water and all that. Is there a way to do that and not get entirely confused, or for me to not get entirely confused?
so yes, I'll give it a shot.
Okay, thank you.
When he starts drooling on himself, that's when you've lost him. Okay.
Yeah. So there are many guiding principles and concepts, with traditional Chinese veterinary medicine. Basically, it's a whole different paradigm or way of thinking about health and illness. And in the traditional Chinese perspective, illness or, the not having health is when your body is out of balance. So basically, if you're balanced within yourself and with the environment, you are healthy. And when you're not balanced, it's usually either due to a deficiency of something, an excess of something, or a combination. So a dog that goes to the kennel and gets very stressed around other animals or away from home, away from the owner, and it's not uncommon for them, as you know, to break out with diarrhea. If it's severe enough, it could be bloody diarrhea. So that's a sudden onset. There, is a situation where it is, it's not something they've been having for weeks and months. It's not chronic. It's more acute or sudden onset. And so that typically excess is typically something that is sudden or acute. And in that situation, again, heat causes the blood to be reckless. So if there's bleeding somewhere, it can be due to heat. And anything that's wet or has increased moisture would be considered damp. So that would be a damp heat. Or in a Western sense, we would often call that a stress colitis. If it gets real severe, you know, a smaller dog could have HGE or hemorrhagic gastroenteritis. So that's a little bit of excess. And the other end of things, Western medicine is very good at treating excess conditions. So if you have a dog that has skin allergies, another sign of heat is redness. So dogs with skin allergies, they're real itchy, they're chewing themselves, their skin's very red, inflamed. That's also a sign of heat. And, you know, a lot of times they'll get a pyoderma or a bacterial skin infection. Antibiotics are going to clear that up every time. But every once in a while, you might have an older dog that's had diarrhea for a long time, you know, weeks or months, and it's not responding to the typical treatments, you know, flagyl treatments. And so that diarrhea may not be an excess. It may actually be a deficiency. And that's where acupuncture is very effective, is treating the deficiencies. So these chronic illnesses, your general term for a dog that has diarrhea, is losing weight, any sort of muscle loss, is what's called a spleen qi deficiency. And that dog's probably not going to respond, maybe initially, but not have a holding effect with something like a flagyl treatment. And if you rule out everything else, you know, you can test for lots of parasites and you don't find anything, but it keeps losing weight, it's a perfect candidate for acupuncture. There's so many other concepts, so I don't know, do you want to go into like the five elements?
Yeah, briefly, if you can, you know, again, keep it. So that was great, by the way. Because it is an entirely different way of thinking. I remember sitting there for the first time thinking, well, like you said, you're calling the bleeding heat.
Yes.
I'm calling it, well, something's opened up, you know, yeah. Something's letting loose, you know, it's just, but when you're so practiced in it, and how long have you been doing this now? Pretty long time.
In vet school, I did an externship with a doctor up in Wisconsin in Oconomowoc, and she started the company Herbsmith, and I spent a couple weeks with her. So I knew I always wanted to go into it, and I have two siblings that are chiropractors, and both their spouses are chiropractors, and all four of them are certified in acupuncture.
Cool.
So it's always been something I wanted to do. The course I took at the Qi was just last year. And so the certification is more recent, and I've been practicing on patients since the fall of 2015, so a little over a year now. But I think the hardest part for me has been just trying to understand the concepts and the theory, and I think I had a little bit of an advantage because I had been introduced to the concepts a while ago. And it's one of those things where just when I think I understand it, then something comes up in it and it's like a stumbling block. But it really does help to kind of sit and, you know, go back and read through notes and just talking about the concepts out loud, that can also help.
Perfect.
But yeah, it's something I've always been interested in.
Because it's like veterinary medicine in a different language. You know, yeah. It's like a whole... I mean, because I'm going to take a two-day course in a wet lab in March, and I'm reading the textbook. And it is like when you're trained in Western medicine and you've been doing it for this many years, and then you're trying to think about flow and qi, and you're just like it's so it's abstract. That's the word I'm looking for, you know? And like Western medicine is so you can hold the spleen. You can say, this spleen has cancer. It is bad. You know what I mean? And like all these qi, all these things you can't see. I think for me, make it hard. I don't know. Because if I can't see it or sense it in some way, I'm just like,
ah. Just wait. It only gets harder. Just wait until Dr. Chase starts talking.
Well, I think we can all relate, though, getting to your point of like energy, which is qi. we all know people in our lives that if you spend an hour or two, you know, be it a friend or a family member, they either you walk away from that feeling energized and vitalized or feeling just drained, you know. We all know someone, or the classic SNL skit, Debbie Downer, like, womp, womp, womp. You know, exist in a physical state, but also an energetic state. And it is interesting because the Chinese medicine can be a little more proactive. It can catch an imbalance before it becomes, you know, a physical structural change that you can measure even on blood work. And correcting it in an early state can hopefully avoid or slow down the progression. Another area for cats, just going back to that briefly, is any cat with chronic kidney disease, which you kind of alluded to is pretty common in the older kitties. A lot of the points, the acupuncture points along the back, there are points that correlate directly to the individual organs. So the spleen, the kidney, the stomach, and you can actually, you know, improve or support organ function, you know, by treating those points along the back. It's just a really powerful tool.
Utterly fascinating.
I have a question. I don't know if this is possible or not, but you gave the example of the dog who, whenever it goes to a boarding kennel, it gets stress diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Could you do acupuncture preventatively? Like, okay, every time you do this, this is going to happen. So have an appointment before he goes to prevent it, or does it already have to be existing for acupuncture to be effective?
That's a really good question. I'd say it's an opportunity and a downfall in the sense that more research could and should be done. And I don't know if there's any studies looking at that. But I personally think that you could help. Again, doing acupuncture, there's a point behind the ear. If you take the ear and fold it down on top of itself where the tip of the ear, unless this wouldn't work if they, you know, are missing part of their ear, but if you flip it down, there's a point behind the ear called Anshen, and that's a calming point, and you can do acupuncture in there, and theoretically, the effect of that would last 5 to 7 days.
Hmm.
In some animals, you can do either saline or vitamin B12. You can do a tiny bit of ACE if it's a really stressed out dog.
Oh, wow.
with saline in that point, and the stress component that leads to the diarrhea could be treated proactively. So I would say it'd be a very interesting study, and I would think that it would help.
ACE, by the way,
most
of the folks that listen don't know our lingo. ACE is short for ACE promazine, and that is a sedative, a tranquilizer, what have you. So you're actually integrating that with the ether, and that's pretty cool.
Yes, and that dose would be basically, you know, a drop or two. It wouldn't be the therapeutic right. sedative type dose.
Enough to get it through an itty-bitty, fine little teeny-weeny needle.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I remember I asked this of Dr. Shea. He was a little noncommittal because I don't know if he's a fan of the therapy laser. But my question to him was, because you're seeing rehabilitation is now becoming a board, I believe there is a board certification. Don't ask me what the American College of whatever is called to get that board certification is, but I know there's a couple in my area that have it. And part of that board certification is actually getting Chinese traditional medicine and acupuncture certified. And then the next step is to do whatever the next step is with therapy laser and all the other things that they're doing, water treadmill and what have you. I asked Dr. Shea, how do you integrate this with the therapy laser? You know, so do you do one or the other, or do you do them together? He kind of downplayed the therapy laser and just kind of, I don't know, kind of blew off the question a little bit. I got the impression that he didn't see a lot of value in therapy laser. He said, well, you know, if I'm going to pick one or the other, I'm really going to go with acupuncture because the tissue penetration of the laser is so variable that it's still being debated. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I always agree with Dr. Shea. And
smart woman.
And I I can elaborate in my own experience. I actually did purchase a laser unit that has a setting to do laser acupuncture. So I have some patients, there are some animals out there, as I'm sure you've met, that are terrified of needles in general. You know, the vaccine.
I'm one of those animals, by the way, personally.
Once you start drawing up the vaccine, they turn, they look, they know exactly what you're doing, and they're terrified. So, and we didn't really get into the personalities, but the five elements, the fire dogs in general are afraid of needles. So a fire dog is the one that runs up to you, is very happy, gives you lots of kisses, doesn't stop, keeps kissing you, and likes to be the center of attention. A lot of Boston Terrier type dogs or toy poodle are fire dogs.
I was going to say, most pit bulls around here.
A lot of yeah, that's true too. Yeah, kiss you in the face. Yep.
That's ubiquitous with pit bulls, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, in general, they tend to be more afraid of the needles. And so every now and then I'll have a patient that I know, at least for the first couple of sessions, I can't do the needle acupuncture. And so I can use my laser unit for actually laser acupuncture. There's a special probe and a special setting, and you run the laser 30 seconds over each point. And if it's a point I want to emphasize, I might go back and do it a second time. But I don't just use it for that. If a patient's primary vet does not have a laser unit, that and they have an area on the body that has musculoskeletal pain, I can use the laser setting for musculoskeletal pain. And one case in particular that it was extremely helpful for in using both the laser and acupuncture was a dog that had IBDD in her lumbar spine and also in her cervical spine, so her neck. And I don't know about you guys, but in my experience, dogs with the cervical IBDD or a disc in the neck are usually, and it can be intermittent, but you know, at least twice as painful as the spine. They are usually come in and they're so tense, you can just see their muscle is tone is increased. And this dog that I was treating was not able to walk. She could stand briefly. She still had motor and pain, but she was very severely affected. The owner was considering surgery, but was probably not going to do it. And so I started treatment with acupuncture, but I couldn't get anywhere near the points in her neck because she was so painful. And I used the laser both for musculoskeletal pain or muscle spasm and also for the acupuncture points in the neck. And within, I'd say, 3 or 4 treatments, she was able to stand longer. Within 6 treatments, she was walking again. And the owner did end up going for a consult on surgery just to see what the options were. But that the day before that, she started walking on her own. So, you know, they didn't see, if they had seen her even a few days prior, they probably would have really pushed for the surgery. But she responded excellent to the treatment. And I don't know, I really don't think she would have responded as quickly if I didn't have a laser unit. So I personally have found it invaluable in certain situations like that.
So did you start with the laser and then eventually work your way into needles or just laser the whole time with her?
Oh, no, I did both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I started acupuncture along the lumbar spine, and I tried to incorporate the neck. Eventually I was able to go around the neck at least, but throughout it, she wouldn't tolerate the points directly along, closer to the area where the disc was, you know, putting pressure on the nerve. She never would tolerate needles directly in that area, but yes, I did needles, for her hind end the whole time. It definitely was a combination of the two, but to reach that area of her body, the needle-free acupuncture was definitely, you know, invaluable.
Huh. So I like to touch on... Oh, go ahead, Roger. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Continue, please.
No, because I was going to say, I like to touch on herbs a little bit, too, because that's another part.
Oh, absolutely.
traditional Chinese medicine or TCM, I always think acupuncture. But herbs are a whole other part of that that I think don't get mentioned a lot. And it's something I know absolutely nothing about. I'm not going to lie. So I had a friend in vet school who was really, really, really into holistic medicine. And her theory was if you did anything with herbs or anything with Chinese medicine at all, to avoid Western medicine because you couldn't mix them and you had to kind of dive into one or the other. So I'm curious, Dr. Heidi, if you can kind of mesh the herbs with Western style medicine, or if, you know, kind of what your take is on that.
Thank you, Karen. That was my biggest question of the night, I think.
So I can only speak for myself and in my own experience. Personally, I, number one, want to do what I think is best for the patient. And number two, don't want them to feel like, and don't want their primary veterinarian to feel like I'm coming in and taking over and it's my way or the highway. So personally, I am open to and often do incorporate both traditional treatment and acupuncture and herbal medicine for patients. There are specific contraindications for the herbal formulas that you have to be aware of. You know, pregnant patients, a lot of herbs are contraindicated, even acupuncture points. Personally, I wouldn't treat a patient that was pregnant with acupuncture just out of a precautionary approach unless that, you know, it was that or nothing. But going back to the original question, I do both. And if an animal comes to me for a disc problem, often they're already on, you know, the traditional trio. I prefer prednisone over an NSAID, especially if it's a neck or if it's severe pain. So either whatever your thought is on that, either an NSAID or prednisone, usually they're on one, along with tramadol and methocarbamol a lot of times. And I don't recommend taking them off of that. I don't think that that would be a reason to not do herbals. I often do herbals with that. The limiting factor would be, you know, the pet parent or the owner, if they're stressed.
Uh-oh, did we lose her?
One more thing. I can see
back.
You.
Yeah, you cut out there for a moment there.
Yeah,
Dr.
We lost you a little bit. I was like, no, she's getting good.
Can you repeat what you just said? I'm sorry, we lost you for like 10 seconds.
Oh, yeah, no problem. So I do both. The only reason I would limit giving an herb or multiple herbs to a patient would be if I can get a sense that the pet parent is getting frustrated and, you know, has, like, they'll do three medications but not four, you know. So then you might have to pick and choose what you think is best.
That's
so this is a silly question, but are all herbs, are they all oral, are they all pills, or are there any that are, like, absorbed under the tongue or in the eye or, like, you know, applied any other weird way, injected, or is it all pretty much just pills?
The herbs come in pill form, so the oral herbs, there's...
Oh, shoot, we're losing you again.
Oh. Always yeah. Right when it's getting good.
I know, it's always right when she's telling us what I want to hear, too. I'm like, oh! Right, okay, so can you start? I'm sorry.
We lost you at the generally come in pill form.
Yeah.
The herbs.
So the oral herbs come in pill, capsule, tea pill is a small, like a BB pellet size, or powder. There are also herbs that, yes, can go in the eye. So in particular for dry eye, there is an herb that you can put in the eye. And there are salves or ointments that have herbs in them. And I would say there's one in particular called golden yellow powder or the golden yellow salve. It's very, very good for any large infected wound that can't be closed primarily. The hospital I worked at in Massachusetts had a lot, we saw a lot of wildlife. And so bunny rabbits that had large amounts of skin torn off that could not be closed, they would use that golden yellow salve, and it was incredible how quickly they would heal up and recover from what looked like, you know, life-threatening wounds. So anytime I could, I would debride it and close it primarily, but if you couldn't do that, you know, we covered them with antibiotics and pain meds and did the salve, and a lot of them did very, very well.
Huh, that's surprising. Yeah, whole wildlife thing, actually, you know, you think dogs, cats, you know, I wasn't even thinking about wild rabbits, but yeah, hey.
what are some of the, when you think of systemic conditions, like really, really sick dogs or cats?
Or rabbits. No.
Don't, you lost me at rabbits. I do love rabbits, but they make me itch. They're always trying to break their backs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm always scared to hold them. I'm like, nope, you're gonna break your back. Let's just think of a severe disease. You've had phenomenal results with Chinese herbal medicine, and a common one too. Something maybe our listeners could connect to. Do you realize there's gonna be about 2,000 people that have listened to you within about 5 days of airing tomorrow?
Wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, but like if there was like one like really bad disease that you're like Chinese medicine can kick its butt.
Kick its butt, yeah.
What would you say?
Oh, on the spot. I mean, I would say those cervical discs. You know, for a family that can't take the dog to surgery, either a cervical disc because they're so painful. You try to get them off the pred, you're doing your taper, you get down to the lower dose, and they just go back to severe pain. And I've had phenomenal results with herbal and acupuncture for those cases.
What's the herbal you use there? So obviously it's got to have pretty strong anti-inflammatory properties. What would be the herbal you would use there in combination with acupuncture for a cervical disc?
So all the herbals that I use, I get through Jingtang Herbal because I feel like they do a really good job.
It's Dr. Shea's brand.
It is Dr. Shea's brand. I've toured their facility. I met the woman who tastes every single herb that comes through.
Love it.
You know, I don't officially take them myself, but that might happen from time to time. I just really trust the quality.
Good.
And they have a formula that is called cervical formula, which cervical meaning that section of the spine, the neck. And so if it's a neck, a disc in the neck or suspected disc in the neck and x-rays are negative for any bony lesions, then I will often use the cervical formula. And there's another formula called double P, which is excellent for pain, severe pain, and reduced flow of information. So if patients have absent conscious proprioception, where they are flipping their feet over and they don't realize the foot's upside down and they're not correcting it. So if it progresses from pain to CP deficits or conscious proprioceptive deficits, the double P is excellent. I would use the double P for a disc issue anywhere in the spine and then add in the cervical formula for the pain.
I think it's your turn to ask something, Karen, because I could just keep going consecutively.
I
don't want to hog Dr. Heidi. This is just fascinating.
Well, that's the first time I met her, I was like, it's so interesting because there's so many different things. Now, one thing you told me, Dr. Heidi, that really blew me away when we first met is you're talking about you can look at an animal's tongue and get a lot of information from that, which I'm like, well, yeah, you can tell if they have a tongue or not. and if they like to give kisses. But medically, again, back to that whole how traditional Chinese medicine is like this whole abstract way of thinking. And I think the tongue example is a good example of that. When you were saying how they're redder or bluer. And I'm like, well, obviously, in Western medicine, if it's a purple tongue, you put them on oxygen. But there's a lot more a lot more nuanced things in between those two extremes. I'll let you kind of explain that more.
So, yeah, so exactly. In some dogs, they'll present their tongue. Some dogs are panting when they're nervous. Sometimes I have to give them a treat to get a look at the tongue. Basically, the colors, common colors that we would see would be a pale tongue. You know, pale can be a sign of a deficiency. And if you have an older patient with a pale tongue, you know, you would also use the pulses to guide you. But a lot of times, you know, you check some blood work as well, of course. They can be anemic, you know, which is something that translates across, you know, both fields of study. Purple tongue, since you mentioned that, can be a sign of stagnation. And stagnation is lack of flow. Basically, it's when energy is stuck somewhere. You could think of it like a bruise where there's swelling and pain. So next time you have a dog that comes in with a disc or any, you know, broken leg, anything that's severely painful, if you look at the tongue, there's probably going to be at least a section of it that looks lavender or purple. And so it can also be a sign if an animal, you know, one example would be a horse that on a hot day drinks a large amount of cold water very quickly, and they can get excess cold or, you know, acute colic, and they could have a purple tongue. So purple can mean different things. Red can either be an excess heat condition, or it can be a deficiency of the internal cooling system. If you talk about yin and yang, or yin and yang, however you choose to pronounce it, yin is kind of like the freon of the AC system in the body. It's what keeps you cooler. The yin time of the day, 24-hour a day, is nighttime. And the moon is more yin. The sun is more yang or yang. And so if they have a deficiency, it could also be...
Oh, crap. You froze up again. It's always what you...
versus an excess...
So we lost you. You cut. Oh, it's awesome. You're getting good. You cut out right where you said if you have a deficiency.
I don't think
and
she's
then...
ever getting bad. That's the problem. She's always saying something interesting.
I know.
So any cutout is unacceptable.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I can repeat that again. I'm so sorry.
Just the last part.
Yes. Oh, yes. So the red tongue, it can either be an excess. You have to kind of think of context. If it's hot summertime and you've got a young, healthy dog and they broke with the bloody diarrhea and their tongue's real red, it's probably an excess heat. Versus an older kind of frail dog drinks water, sips small amounts frequently throughout the day. It's kind of similar to a woman as she goes through menopause later in life and gets hot flashes. She doesn't have too much heat. She has a deficiency of her cooling system, or the yin of her body is deficient. And so if you have a balance between yin and yang and suddenly you don't have enough yin, it looks like you're too hot, or it's called a false heat.
Oh, that's so interesting, because it's like a reverse way of thinking about it. I would just think, look for what's causing the heat, not look for why you're not cooling, you know?
Yeah.
Very different perspective.
I know.
There's so many different ways of looking at it. So I live in practice in, I believe, the heartworm capital of the United States, Florida. And there was a holistic practitioner down the road from me. He's since retired, but he got on my nerves because he didn't do any diagnostics ever. He relied on looking at the tongue. He relied on looking at the eyes. And apparently he knew everything, what was wrong with the pet, by doing that. And then would just either recommend herbal medicine and or acupuncture. And so I had like a feline case come to me, and he diagnosed her with yin and I say yang, sorry.
Yeah, I do too. I guess that's a ignorant Midwestern American way of, I don't know.
It is. It's anyway. So he diagnosed, and I saw the write up, yin and yang kidney disease. And I ended up working this cat, and the cat was just doing worse and worse and worse over the course of months. And I ended up working up the cat and figured out the cat didn't, her kidneys were fine, had GI lymphoma, you know, and so. Mm. You know, I love what you're doing, and I love to hear the fact that you do diagnostics. I know Dr. Shea is a huge proponent of diagnostics, and that's huge. The question I want to ask you, though, about back to heartworm, I'm going to get there in a second. It all circles back. I'm very long-winded. I'm sorry.
Okay,
the same doctor, and I'm not I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to do that. But he had been treating a case of heartworm with herbal medicine. And the lady who took the dog there had a diagnosis. He didn't do any diagnostics. He just accepted the diagnosis. And he was treating for, I guess, 18 months. And so the lady brought the dog in to me for a yearly. And I tested for heartworm, and lo and behold, it was a glowing positive. So I just said to her, hey, look, you know, I don't understand. This is, we're going back to 2006 here, but the case bothered me so much, and the woman bothered me so much that I still have, it's still very acute in my mind.
You're still bitter, yeah.
I'm a little bitter because I said, you know, so in 06, I had not even dabbled in this stuff yet. I didn't do the one-day course until, I want to say, 2012 or 2013. So long story short or short story long, I said to her, you know, it doesn't seem to be working. So maybe we consider going the other route, which is the more traditional. And she got really mad at me. Oh, well, you're saying so Dr. So-and-so doesn't know what he's doing? You don't believe in this stuff? You don't have an open mind? I'm like, I didn't say that, but I'm saying your dog is still heartworm positive. So maybe it's time to consider something else. And mm-hmm. she said, well, he's still positive because I didn't do what Dr. So-and-so said I needed to do. I didn't follow through the way I was supposed to. And that's why he's positive. And I said, well, you know, back then the protocol was just 2 shots. It's 3
oh,
now.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. changed. But I'm like, you're talking 2 shots, 24 hours apart, and you're done. You know, I mean, I'm just saying you can make your life a little easier. Anyway, mm-hmm. she was through with me. I think she wrote a bad review on Google or whatever. So back to my question. Was she right? Is it treatable? Can you clear heartworm with Chinese herbal medicine?
So I don't know is the short answer. I've never heard of a study looking at that. And we definitely are. There's actually the Qi Institute started the first master's program for I'm not sure if it's just, I think it is TCVM master's degree. And they are focusing on trying to get more studies, more research, more articles out there looking at, you know, treating different diseases with, you know, the alternative approach, maybe in conjunction with other treatments. And so I could do a search and look, but I'm not aware of
oh, man, we lost you again.
Personally, we're very... Oh, so, am I
so
back?
If, yeah, you're back. So a heart-positive dog, you would reach for the imidacide?
And... Personally, yes.
Okay.
It's effective. It does have some side effects, but they are, you know, the risk-benefit says I would treat with the traditional medication, yes.
Okay.
And I don't personally know of any studies either, you know, retrospective or any sort of study that discusses treating it with heartworm disease with acupuncture or herbal medicine. I'm not aware of any. But like I said, I could look into it, but I would be most comfortable at this point in my career treating with the traditional treatment. And I would say, you know, that, you know, having an open mind, but also maybe she wasn't having an open mind about the fact that 18 months into the treatment, the dog was still positive.
Yeah, and she blamed herself, you know, more than anything.
Yeah, you know, that's you know, tough, because then there's emotions, you know, yeah. You know, maybe some guilt on her end. But it's a tough call. I had someone, you know, come to me recently that was hoping to have acupuncture for skin growth on the dog. And, you know, there are limitations. If anything, one of the contraindications for acupuncture is you can't get too close to a tumor of any kind, whether, you know, it's a benign or not, or if you don't know, you're not going to needle away. Typically, you're not going to needle away skin growths. Yeah. And so I advised to her, there were a couple that looked suspicious to me, and I did cytology on them and was, you know, concerned enough. It wasn't just a lipoma. It looked like it was something else, whether benign or not, recommended, you know, surgery and a biopsy. I think she was a little upset with me because she was hoping to get, you know, a more holistic treatment for them. But, you know, I kind of explained to her too, you know, not in a mean way or malicious way, but, you know, I'm not going to cure a broken bone with acupuncture. So
right.
There are, you know, sometimes surgery or other traditional treatments are best.
Well, and I think I have some clients who are like, I want to do this all holistic. And it's like, everything has its niche. You know, like there's acupuncture is great for some things, you know, traditional Chinese medicine is great for some things, but like you hit the nail on the head when a dog's hit by a car, you know, you're not going to be like, oh, well, we'll just wait and not pin your leg and take this herb and magic will happen, you know? So it's not magic. It actually is medicine, you know?
Right. There is actually an herb for internal bleeding that you can give to a hit by car patient while you're stabilizing them.
Oh, funny.
Well, one of the beauties of Dr. Shea and that whole Qi Institute is it's very connected to the University of Florida. And he yes. actually does a lot of work with their clinicians. They do. Mm-hmm. They find areas of opportunity where they can actually better one another's medicine. It's mm-hmm. like this phenomenal symbiosis they have. I don't think mm-hmm. they're officially part of University of Florida, but I know the students rotate through there if they so choose. So it's really a beautiful thing. And one of the doctors there that he works with quite a bit is Dr. Roger Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
Not the famous pitcher. You're from Mass, I know. But he did do better with the Yankees, just saying. I'm from New Jersey originally. Roger Clemens, he's really known for his pioneering work in degenerative myelopathy, which before I started really reading his stuff, I thought was, there's nothing you can do. Oh, I'd like your opinion on that in acupuncture in just a second. But he did a study with Dr. Shea in combination, and they compared the efficacy of decompressive disc surgery for severely paritic or paralytic cases in comparison to using electroacupuncture. And the numbers were in the 90 percentile. I forget the exact number, but it was very comparable. And Dr. Shea showed us the outcome of that study. I'm sure you were privy to it at some point. And so there's a situation where you think, well, there's a compression. You can't take away the compression without, you know, physically removing it. We do have very high success rates with surgery, yet this study really showed that electroacupuncture did something that successfully enabled, in several cases, to avoid that. Do you do electro as well?
Yes. So electroacupuncture is very good for any painful condition, any neurologic deficit, and also more internal medicine, you know, like pancreatitis or other severe GI symptoms. I really like the electro, and it's an invaluable tool for pain relief as well. So that study, there's quite a few studies out now that look at, you know, just electroacupuncture, just surgery, or surgery with electroacupuncture, and the patients do best if they're getting the electroacupuncture, whether or not they get the surgery. Some of that depends if there's no deep pain, if you have a paralyzed dog and there's no deep pain present. It is still best to get a decompressive surgery within the first 24 hours. But if they are paralyzed and not able to walk and still have deep pain present, the electro, in a lot of cases, can get them back on their feet. You know, it's going to take maybe 6 to 8 treatments. But if they've been paralyzed less than 2 years, you know, there's maybe about 80% or higher response rate.
Amazing.
Which is,
can you explain what electroacupuncture is?
Oh yes, I should have started there. So basically, it's a black box that has leads or wires coming out of it that have little alligator clips, and each lead has 2 units because you're basically flowing electricity from positive to negative through the line, and you're connecting those leads to an acupuncture needle that's been placed in an acupuncture point. So you put the needles in the animal first, and then you hook up the leads. Each lead has two ends, and then once they're hooked up, you turn on the electric flow. And I'll typically run them at 20 hertz for 10 minutes, and then an alternating 80 and 120 hertz for another 10 minutes. So it's a little hard to describe it without showing you the unit. But basically, I have 7 leads, so I can have them connected to 14 different points at one time. Sometimes I'll do just one or two points, especially if the animal's a little nervous or it's their first treatment.
How does it feel, the electroacupuncture? Does it feel different?
I've done it to myself because I want to know what I'm doing to my patient. And it just feels like a constant little, or you can do a pulsed signal or like a vibration. And if you turn it up higher, it can actually become uncomfortable. There is a scale of 1 to 10 as far as the intensity of the signal. What I was trained to do is place the needles, connect them to the leads, and then, you know, pick your time setting and the frequency you're going to run them at. And then intensity, I'll turn it on and adjust it slowly, watching the animal for a sign that they feel it. And that can be anything, you know, subtle from the skin on their back tensing up, or less subtle, them turning and looking at you.
So, walking away from you, yeah.
I've had that happen too. So the point is not to hurt them, but you want to go up to an intensity where they definitely feel it and can notice it, and then I turn them down just a little bit from there. And you can adjust, ideally you would adjust the intensity to whatever they can tolerate throughout the treatment. With a lot of my patients, I'll just adjust it when I switch them to the 80-120 alternating frequency. So it's better for, because if you do too much, then yes, they might get up and try to walk away, and then you didn't really get any electro in.
Right. Well, I know, Dr. Roger, you wanted to know about degenerative myelopathy, too.
See,
this is like Christmas for us, because we're like, ooh, we can ask all these questions.
We're exceeding our time limit on our talk radio network, they only allow us to go for so long. We're just a little over the hour point, so we're going to have to wrap it up. But thank you so much. I mean, I could keep going another hour, honestly.
Oh, yeah. He's just getting warmed up.
Seriously, I love it. I'm so into it. I wish I had the time to pursue it, but you know, it's not in the cards for me. But speaking with you is phenomenal, and I wish I had somebody like you closer by that we could work more closely in conjunction. Any final thoughts there, Dr. Karen?
I just want to say, Dr. Heidi, you did a fantastic job. So thank you very much for answering all of our questions, and you made acupuncture make sense a little bit, which is hard to do. So
quick plug for your practice. What's the name of your house call acupuncture practice, and where is it?
It's Healthy Balance Vet, or Healthy Balance Veterinary Acupuncture. And I'm based out of Belleville, Illinois. And the website you can get general information on is healthybalancevet.com.
Okay. That'll also be on the show page. I will post that in the episode description. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Karen, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank
you. Keep warm up there, ladies. I know it's cold. It dropped down to 68 here today. We were dying.
Bring your pets inside, yeah.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Good night.